We'll proceed now to hear argument in the next case on the calendar, which is 22-15858 DW Ainalea Development LLC versus State of Hawaii Land Use Commission. We'll hear first from Mr. Sim, who is appearing by video. Mr. Sim, you...
Good morning, Your Honors.
You may...
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Sanjay Peter Sim. I represent DW Ainalea Development LLC in this case. But the main central issue in this case is whether DW Ainalea Development LLC had standing to commence this suit and maintain this suit. There were transfers or assignments of interest throughout the course of years that DW participated in this development project. As set forth in the brief, there were various business reasons why subsidiary Ainalea LLC was created, right? Had to do with the development project
itself.
Can I
ask a question about what occurred in the bankruptcy, just so that I make sure that I understand at a global level what occurred? Were any of the creditors who showed up in the bankruptcy shorted? In other words, they received less on the dollar as part of the bankruptcy plan?
No, Your Honor. Nobody was shorted on the bankruptcy plan. The final plan that was approved, you know, provided that DW had a certain number of years to fulfill repayment of those debts. So there was no one that was shorted on that.
What was the primary objective then of the bankruptcy?
Well, it was basically to stay the possible foreclosures from debtors on the property, to seek time to obtain necessary financing. It was Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
How was DW's position altered in the bankruptcy?
DW's position was not altered in the bankruptcy. This was a bankruptcy that was filed by Ainalea Inc. For Chapter 11. DW's, you know, with respect to this particular case, you know, there was disclosure that DW Ainalea Development LLC had an action in the district court that pursued a temporary takings claim against the state of Hawaii. So there was complete disclosure. There was approval of the disclosure statement within the bankruptcy, where it indicated that DW Ainalea was pursuing a claim for regulatory taking against the state of Hawaii.
It's kind of weird because it's listed in the bankruptcy schedule for the debtor, that the debtor has an interest in a lawsuit in which it is not a party. So lawsuit is identified as being brought by someone other than the debtor, and it's disclosed as something that the debtor has an interest in.
Yes, and that has to do with the manner in which if the appellant prevails on this action and is able to obtain monetary damages, the manner in which that money gets divided between the various entities, Ainalea Inc., who was the debtor in possession and debtor in the bankruptcy Chapter 11 proceeding, would have an interest, financial interest, in those monetary damages. And it's also important to keep in mind that as far as Ainalea Inc., Ainalea LLC, or DW Ainalea Development LLC, it was managed essentially by two individuals. The same individuals that manage each one of these companies by the name of Bob Wessels and Rick Bernstein, right? These two individuals are at the helm of all these corporations and entities. So there was an implied authority, I would say at the very least, that DW had the authority and standing to continue and maintain the suit.
Then you tried to create actual authority in what arguably appeared to be an attempt to carry out a fraud on the court. Was this document that was created in the later period and presented as if it were signed in January of the earlier year, was that presented to the district court as actually signed on the earlier date or executed on the earlier date?
Nobody tried to perpetuate a fraud. You know, I presented a document that
clearly the district court thought Bob Russell, it was from January of, I think, 2019 was the year.
That question was asked of me, and I had indicated that I would have to find out more information because basically this was handed to me by Bob Wessels. And upon further inquiry, Bob Wessels says that Rick Bernstein has sent it. And when I spoke to Rick Bernstein, he said that it wasn't created on the prior date. It was created on this date. And I disclosed that fact to the court. So as far as
when it was originally presented, nothing indicated to the court that that had been created at an earlier date, at a later date, and backdated.
I mean, at the time when I was presented to the court, when the court asked me, I indicated that I did not have that information and that I would obtain that information and get back to the court. That's why that date was adjourned for a further date.
I think that means the answer to my question is yes. When it was presented to the court, it to all appearances looked like a document created at the earlier date. Nothing disclosed that it had been created at a later date and backdated.
No, it didn't, Your Honor. And at the time when I presented it, I thought it was created at an earlier date as well. So I would say that, you know, nothing was disclosed to the court that this was created at a later date.
Let me ask you a question about Hawaii law. The district court operated on the assumption that once there is a contract for the sale of property, then the buyer under the contract has beneficial, equitable interest in the property that could give rise to a right to assert a takings claim. So who under Hawaii law was the holder of those rights during the period before this sale closed?
Well, before the sale closed, it was actually DW. I think that DW obtained pre-closing possessory rights on February 9, 2009. Thereafter, they expended money within the project itself, substantial amount of monies. The property was not reverted until April 25, 2011. So during that period of time, everything was DW. DW assigned its rights to what it had to Analeo LLC in 2012, following the reversion, and while this matter was pending before the Hawaii State Court that eventually went up to the Hawaii Supreme Court. But Analeo LLC at that time was a subsidiary of DW Analeo Development LLC. I'm not sure if that answers your question, Your Honor.
Well, you know, at that point, Analea is the entity that is the buyer, at least under the paper. Now, DW has obligations as well, but the listed buyer is the other entity. So why isn't that the entity that under Hawaii law would have the beneficial rights that the district court pointed to?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm looking at this as a central purpose, that each one of these entities have a central purpose to develop this property, all for the benefit of DW Analea Development LLC. Analea LLC was a mere subsidiary designed just to obtain financing on the affordable housing area of this development. So if you're asking me literally, Analea LLC has a possessory interest in this property.
Right, but my question is, does DW also, or would DW only have such rights if it had an assignment from the other entity?
I believe that DW also had those rights. I mean, as far as the monies that continue to pour, the financial guarantees that DW gave to its lenders on this particular project, the role that DW had in developing this project, which included, you know, the master planning, revisions of master planning, EIS reports, planning meetings, that they had a very central role in this development, that they were working in conjunction together with Analeo LLC with common management.
I want to clarify what you said before.
Sure.
When did DW assign its right to the takings claim to Analeo?
Well, I'm not sure that they assigned the takings claim, right?
But the bankruptcy court said that Analeo had now the right to the takings claim.
That had a retained cause of action, but that DW Analeo Development LLC is continuing the prosecution of this action.
Wait, but why would the bankruptcy court say that if Analeo didn't have it, if DW still had it?
Well, I mean, I think that the Analeo had the retained cause of action, Your Honor. Yes, correct. But the bankruptcy court permitted DW to maintain this action against the state of Hawaii.
Mr. Sim, could I ask you a question? What is your position with respect to the $17 million note, unsecured, to be paid out of the sale of the land by Analeo to DW? My question to you is this. Are you maintaining that's a separate ground for standing in this case?
That could be a separate ground for standing in this case because they have a possessory interest.
I'm not asking you whether it could be. I'm asking you whether that is your position.
That is the position, Your Honor.
Okay.
Ask a question. Did the bankruptcy plan say anything about how any proceeds from the lawsuit, if it was successful, would be distributed?
The bankruptcy court did not make that determination, Your Honor.
Okay. It was a retained property of Analeo?
It became a retained cause of action for Analeo.
And so So it leaves bankruptcy with that and presumably would retain whatever funds were obtained with nothing from the plan saying anything about that. Am I reading that correctly?
That would be correct, Your Honor. The plan did not basically provide in the event that any money is received as a result of these causes of action how that money is to be distributed.
Because okay. The district court makes a reference to sort of like jumping the line in terms of that the creditors should somehow be treated unfairly if DW gets a portion of the proceeds of the lawsuit that would be taken out of the hands of the creditors. But I'm not seeing where that is in the structure of the bankruptcy plan.
Yeah, I don't see that at all, Your Honor. You know, this is not money that would be taken out of the hands. I mean, these creditors still have, you know, security interest in this property as far as the land is concerned. So I'm not exactly sure where that came from and how the creditors would be detrimented by that, right? That this is just an indication that DW has a retained interest to collect $17 million from this development once the development became profitable and profits were being distributed within the entities.
I have another.
At this point in time,
I have another question, which is the district. You had, as the district court identified, three different potential takings theories, and the district court rejected two of them in the summary judgment ruling. And then on top of that said that there was a standing problem as to the entirety of the case. Your opening brief does not challenge the first of those rulings, that two of the three theories are gone. And so that seems to me to be a forfeiture, that those issues are just now dropped out of the case, and that even if you win on standing, you only go back on the one theory. Am I reading that correctly? And if Do you think not? Why am I not?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think I waived the three elements. I mean, I'm basically challenging the entire district court's ruling on that issue.
If the district court rules against you on a claim based on two grounds and your opening brief only challenges one of them, that's gone because that
I understand.
That claim was rejected for two reasons. You've only attacked one of them, so the other one stands and the claim is washed out of the case at that point.
We can accept that, Your Honor. Okay. And at this point in time, I'd like to reserve the additional time for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay. All right. Hear now from Mr. Day. You may proceed.
May it please the court. The following words are the words of U.S. District Court Judge Judge Mullen.
Yes, speak up a little bit more.
Oh, pardon me. Yeah. The following words are from the dispositive order of Judge Mulway. Quote, no admissible evidence frustrated this court's efforts, failed to offer any coherent argument, contradicted by the very documents that DW cites, careless, well, misleading.
There's a fundamental problem from my point of view in how the district court approached this case, because the district court read this bankruptcy plan and the reference that, you know, Inalea has rights in the suit as, well, they have the rights in the suit, so factually there must have been an assignment of the suit from DW to Inalea. I just don't see where that factual assumption is correct. The schedule very clearly said that it was a suit brought in DW's name. And it seems kind of a mismatch because the suit's brought in the name of another entity. It wasn't like, oh, here's a suit by Analea or not a suit that Analea. Here's a suit that's actually been filed. Here's the case number. And it's brought by DW. Analea isn't even a party. And that's what's retained. It's not described. So this notion that we were sent on this find the assignment from DW to Analea just seems like wrong. They were not paying attention to who in the contract really had the rights, and they listed the suit brought by one company as being the other without worrying about whether there was an assignment. So this whole, tell me why you think I'm wrong if I'm wrong in saying I don't see why we had this factual premise that, well, when did the assignment occur? Maybe there was an assignment and they just listed something in the name of somebody else belonging to Analea.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think there's several reasons why in the factual record that established that an assignment did occur. Among them, I think probably the most important is that at least on five occasions in their briefing, they admit that the claim was assigned. It was assigned, let's see.
Well, I mean, the district court said, here's the hoop you have to jump through. Now show me you can jump through it. And so their brief is filled with things that say, I can jump through that hoop. But I'm questioning the whole premise that the district court said this case has to rest on an assignment from DW to Analea and show me where it is and then I'm just not seeing where that's true. This whole thing rested on beneficial rights under Hawaii law when you have a contract and both DW and Analea were parties to that contract to buy the property. The title was to be in Analea, both of them shared the obligations. Why didn't that mean they both had beneficial interests and the whole assignment thing is a red herring?
Well, I mean, if we look at the opposition that was filed to the motion for summary judgment and what was presented to the court and what Judge Mulway had before her was an argument that, yes, we had assigned the claim, but we retained a $17 million interest. The only evidence in the record that supported the fact that there was a $17 million interest coming back was a 2012 assignment of rights from DW to Inalea, but that $17 million was specifically linked to the sale or to the sale of units after they were developed. There was nothing in there that related to the cause of action at issue. So what was before it initially, the court was an agreement. Yes, we assigned the claim, but $17 million is reserved.
But counsel, the $17 million debt, if it's real debt, right, is severely depreciated by the reversion decision, is it not? Therefore, there is a loss to the creditor, DW, of the value of the $17 million during the time that there was a reversion from residential to agricultural. And that, what doesn't that give DW standing in this lawsuit?
Well, so the taking is established as of the date of the alleged taking, right? So you measure everything as of that date, which is, in this case, April 25th, 2011. The agreement that was reached in this case, or that we're talking about now, was January 2012, which postdated it by about 8 months. The $14 million was not at all linked to the reversion. It was actually presuming that lots would be built in the future, and from that, $17 million would flow from Ainalea LLC to DW.
Right. So the value of that note during the time of the reversion, before there was a re-reversion, was severely depreciated, wouldn't you agree? I mean, there wouldn't be any buildings built, there would be no sales, there would be no payment on the note.
I believe that it was anticipating of, you know, future development.
So therefore, why doesn't DW have standing based solely on the $17 million note?
Because, Your Honor, in the complaint, the claim that is made is relating to DW's development rights. A note that is entered into after, several months after the actual date of the alleged taking is not a subject matter of this case, beyond which, it had been argued by DW that was its basis why that, even though it had assigned the claim, it retained some sort of money in that claim. Which
in your position is that DW simply has an alleged, you disagree with Mr. Sim, DW has an alleged standing on the basis of the $17 million note. Correct?
Yes, correct.
Right.
And that's very clear from the complaint.
So going back to this point of Hawaii law, which underlay the district court's ruling, that when you have a contract to purchase real property, that once a contract is signed, the buyer then has beneficial equitable interest that could give rise to takings claim with respect to the property. That was kind of the premise of the district court's analysis. Why would that analysis extend only to Ainalea and not to both of the signatories to the contract who had the obligations and rights under it, which would include DW?
Which contracts are you referring to?
The contracts to purchase the property. The whole theory of the district court's acceptance of one possible claim for taking. She dismissed two of them but kept one, and the one was based on this idea that when you sign a contract to purchase a piece of property, even though you're not the title holder yet, the title holder is reduced to a bare legal title, and the equitable interests are held by the purchaser who is carrying out the contract to then purchase the property, and that was the basis of the potential takings claim that went forward. Who is the holder under Hawaii law of those beneficial rights in that kind of a contract situation? Is it just Ainalea, or is it both DW and Ainalea, because they're both parties to that contract and have obligations and rights under it?
My understanding is that, based on the way that the contracts moved in terms of sequencing, is that in February 11th, 2009, that was the initial purchase and sale agreement, which is called the in the contract. That was just between Bridge and DW. As of December of that year,
2009.
Of 2009, Ainalea LLC actually was conveyed and closed on title to the affordable housing parcel of the property. And so that was obviously within the realm of Ainalea LLC. The remainder of the property never closed with respect to DW at any time. And so with respect to certainly with title, we're talking about only Ainalea LLC.
So just clarify then, which parcels? Are we only talking about the parcels that closed in December of 2009, or is part of the claim relating to other parcels that never closed?
Well, I think that for DW, its claims relate to parcels that never closed, because it didn't own Ainalea, or didn't own the affordable housing parcel on the date of the taking, because, again, it was conveyed to Ainalea LLC on December of 2009. The taking was in April of 2011. And within that time period, DW had no ownership interest over any of the parcels.
And so the parcels that closed in December 2009, there was a formal change of legal title recorded on the property to Ainalea, and all the obligations of the purchase agreement are then completed and closed.
That's correct. I'm otherwise open for your questions at this time.
So your understanding is the takings claim that DW is trying to assert relates to the parcels that didn't close, and under the provisions of the agreement, of that agreement governing those parcels, who had the beneficial rights that I've referred to under Hawaii law? Is it DW and Ainalea, or is it one or the other? Or
on Bridge? The unclosed parcels? Right. I mean, our position was that it was Bridge Ainalea, which is the landowner in the case. And their bridge was, we had a whole trial on it previously where they were the landowner. They were the ones that ultimately, you know, brought the reversion claim. What struck us at the beginning of this case as we were looking at it was that DW Ainalea was asserting claims regarding the regulation of land for which it had never achieved ownership of. And all it had was a contractual, basically a purchase and sale agreement, and that had been superseded over time. From that, when we look at what Judge Mulway did, and this is something that we argue in our answering brief, is that the claim at issue here on the taking side, so basically when we just talk about the property interest at issue, as pled and as presented at all times, it related to what DW called development rights, DW's development rights. Now, there is no document that provides a source for these development rights.
Isn't the predicate for this development rights claims the first takings claim that the district court dismissed on other grounds and that they've conceded now is out of the case?
That's correct. And our position is that that's their whole claim. We even look at the reply brief that they filed. They said DW's property rights were developed. So this is on page 28 of the reply brief. DW's property rights were development rights to the property. That's their claim. The fact is that with respect to their arguments on development rights, they didn't present any arguments on appeal with respect to this. Our position is that the whole case, even if, and I'd like to get back to the assignment issue before I close, but even if we get past this assignment issue and you find that there was standing because of there was error with respect to the assignment analysis, that ultimately, for those reasons, just on the property interest grounds, this court should affirm.
All right, you said you wanted to get back to the...
I would like to, yes. I think when it's important when looking at how this case developed on, in sort of analyzing this assignment issue, is the sequencing along with the way that Judge Mulway actually analyzed the issues. Judge Mulway had stated that there were three things that were undisputed by the plaintiff, DW in this case. One, that an assignment of rights, ultimately would divest a party of standing. Two, if that happened before the filing of the lawsuit, they would not have standing. And three, that INALEA had admitted that it had assigned it at some point in time. There is substantial evidence in the record of the fact that there was an assignment of rights. And again, there was five times in briefs, both in the opening brief, in the reply brief, and in the briefing below, there's statements, explicit statements by DW that said that it had assigned the claim to INALEA Inc. Now, from that, what we know from the record is that 2012 there was an assignment. That was what the $17 million was linked to. 2015 there was an assignment, and that was it. At a hearing, the second hearing, DW was asked point blank by the court, when was the claim assigned? And counsel for DW said it was either 2015 or 2017. Then, after that, we have a submission of minutes, and this is volume 2, ER 81, where there's a document from minutes where it would say that INALEA Inc. was going to be filing
the claim.
Still
seems like something of a red herring, because who had the rights to bring the claim? And now we're only talking about the claim that's in the second of the three buckets, the interference with the right to possess the residential property, and then the district court relies on Hawaii law generally recognized the purchases of real property hold rights protected by the takings clause and this beneficial interest. And if those rights, as a matter of Hawaii law, pertained to INALEA because INALEA was the legal title holder of the relevant parcels, and that transaction had closed before the taking took place, then the only takings claim under Hawaii law is vested in INALEA. And so this whole search for an assignment from DW INALEA is just ridiculous. So the rights were vested in INALEA for the relevant claim, and the bankruptcy schedule then lists a lawsuit that they claim to have an interest in with the wrong party as the plaintiff. So I don't see why we're looking for an assignment from DW to INALEA. The rights are INALEA's under Hawaii law, and there's just a mistake in the caption. I mean, you almost would think, well, where's the assignment from INALEA to DW that you brought the lawsuit by DW? Almost backwards.
Right. I suppose I agree with that. Yes. I think that
did no one in the bankruptcy court thought it's odd you're claiming a right to a lawsuit in which you're not a party?
Well,
that's kind of weird.
So I think that, it is weird, but I will say this, though. I understand that it is weird. I get that. But I think that weird things have happened in this way before. And one of those would be in that Washington Tennis case that we cited, and that was from the D.C. Circuit, the District of Columbia, where basically there had been an assignment of a contract to basically another entity that was related to it. Then the claim was brought by the original entity that had the assignor in the first place, basically because who knows, right? Who knows why they did it that way? I think that sometimes those things kind of happen, and it is weird, and it may not have an obvious explanation. But the fact is that there was admissions, at least five admissions.
All right. So if INALEA is the correct rights holder, and it holds the rights because that's whom Hawaii law gives them to, and not by virtue of some phantom assignment, then why wouldn't it be corrected at the right party? I mean, nobody cited Rule 17 And Rule 17 specifically says that if the suit is brought in the name of someone other than the real party in interest, then the real party in interest is to be brought in. And that seems to be what happened. The suit was brought by DW. The claims actually belong to this other related entity. Why isn't this just a Rule 17 swap? And I don't see why it wasn't corrected.
Well, it was raised as a standing issue. And
it's not standing. It's just substantive law. Who has the rights? Who's the plaintiff under Hawaii law who has the rights? It's who has a cause of action, not so much who has standing. They certainly have an injury. They've been hurt quite a bit by what the state did, but who has the cause of action is just state law now.
Sure. And we're going far afield of what had been briefed below. I mean, basically what Judge Mulway had held was that many of these arguments had been waived, including with respect to the fund liquidation holding case, which references...
But she did, the one issue she did decide is that she wouldn't let this error be fixed because, you know, everyone recognized that the rights belong to Ainalea. And so the question is, well, why not bring in Ainalea? And the response was, well, Ainalea now has assigned them back to DW, and so catch 22? It seems crazy.
Well, there were many other reasons why the court could have granted that. The motion to amend was founded on the idea that the state waived its argument that DW lacks standing. That was the basis for the motion. There was additional...
Which motion?
The motion to amend the scheduling order to allow them to add Ainalea Inc. as a party. The full basis for why that motion was brought was that DW claimed that they were confused or that we had waived our argument that standing was lacking.
How can you waive standing?
That's what we said. And so if you look at that motion and the grounds for that motion, there were about 20 different reasons to deny that motion, along with the reasons...
But the one that the district court picked for denying the motion is that, well, we can't add Ainalea because they assigned away the rights. And so, but the party who was the signee at that point is the party before the court.
And we'll note that, for the record, that DW, in its answering brief and its reply brief, asserted no argument against that. That's a waiver of that argument.
Can we still address it? For example, on the development rights, contractual development rights, it's a pure legal issue. Can we still address that?
Which issue?
On the takings for the right to development. I mean, it's a mess. What would happen to this court? A record before is a complete mess. It's unclear, what happened. I think we were making arguments, maybe that wasn't made, but I mean, can we still consider that?
I think that if you were to consider that, you should also consider the six other reasons in my answering brief for why that motion would have necessarily been denied, including, among other things, the fact that the court had already said that it would deny the motion, any theoretical motion, to file a supplemental pleading on the grounds of lack of diligence, and on the fact that they filed a misleading document that was backdated, which plaintiff's counsel at the hearing, when we discussed this, said that it was his understanding that the 2022 backdated document was in box files within plaintiff's office. It was presented at that time contemporaneously as being a genuine document dated January 29th, 2021, and the court explicitly found that that was misleading and would not have granted leave to amend.
All right. We've allowed you to go over if you want to say any final thought before wrapping up.
Yes, Your Honor. I would just ask that you take a look at the opening brief and the reply brief. The lack of arguments addressing the points of most of which we've addressed today are nowhere to be found in the opening brief or the answering brief. There might be interesting issues underneath all of this, but this is an issue where, these issues have not been preserved below or above, and we respectfully request that the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. All right, you have some time for rebuttal.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to, you know, I mean, I'm the first attorney that's going to say that this is a mess, right? That as far as the assignment from to Analea.
Well, what's your response to to counsel's argument that you've waived and forfeited most of your ability to object to the district court's refusal to allow the proper party issue to be corrected?
I don't think we waived that, Your Honor. There was nothing, you know, we addressed this issue in our briefs regarding the rejection of the scheduling order. So I do not think that statement was correct, that we didn't waive that. You know, the one reason why we sought an amendment of the scheduling order is so that we could bring in the proper party to this, right? That was the point of that scheduling order. That if there is a question that we've got the wrong party, then give us an opportunity just to replace the party, right? Give us an opportunity in the interest of justice to pursue this claim, which clearly there was a takings. Of course, we're going to have to prove the damages aspect of this, but certainly in the interest of justice, if Analea LLC, Analea Inc. was the proper party, then permit us an opportunity to have those parties entered into the case. As I stated before, all these entities under the common management, you know, effectuating that is very easy from our perspective.
Well, it may be that the only claim left in the case, even if the party is fixed, would be Analea's interference with possession claim. And under the published decision in the Bridge case, that seems like a very perilous claim.
It's still a claim that we can pursue. I mean, even if it's an uphill battle, we're still willing to pursue that claim, number one. And then number two, I think there was, you know, in the state's argument, there were some questions regarding property ownership. You know, one aspect of this development was that there were two distinct parts. One is an affordable housing, and the other is the residential parcel, which is by and large much, much larger than the affordable housing section of this property. So the affordable section was where the transfer of title occurred to Analea LLC, but the transfer of title did not occur to LLC alone, right, until much later in time.
Do you agree,
right?
Do you agree that the only parcels that are at issue are the parcels where there was a closing and a transfer of title to Analea?
No, I will not agree to that, Your Honor, simply because, you know, they had pre-closing possessory rights to the residential parcels, right? This was an undertaking that was being developed, that substantial commencement of this property occurred through DW. DW is the one that initially, prior to this reversion, had spent close to, I believe, $31 million.
Assert a takings claim with respect to property that was subject to a contract of sale that never closed?
It did close. The residential parcel did close. But you got to keep in mind that as far as this development is concerned, you've got the affordable housing that was a condition precedent to the development of the residential parcels. That residential parcel, although it was under contract, and during this whole period of time, DW actually ended up paying double the original contract price in negotiations with Bridge to close that residential parcel. I'm sorry. So, you know, the statement that it never closed is false. It did close, right? What closed ahead of time earlier on this development was the affordable housing, which was the condition precedent to developing the residential parcel.
And so that refers to the December 2009 closing that you're opposing counsel.
That's the affordable housing only.
And when was the second closure to which you're referring?
That occurred in 2015. that occurred 2015, where the original contract price, from my recollection, was about $11 million at that time, but that parcel closed for $26 million.
The legal title holder of that is Inalea?
Yes. Okay. Yes. But along those lines, it's also very important to keep in mind that DW never stopped developing this property along with Inalea, right? So they've always had the beneficial ownership interest in this property, although title was held in Inalea.
Okay. All right. Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your arguments in this case, and the case just argued will be submitted.